I want you to imagine that I invite you over to my home for Thanksgiving. And I tell you that we're going to have a great celebration, and we're going to talk about all the things we're grateful for, and it's going to be this incredible time of joy. And you get to my house, and you're excited, and you sit down at my table, and you notice that my table is empty. But I've put a glass on the table, and I pour you a glass of water, and I say, "Let the celebration begin." And you would say, "Where's the food?" Some of you who hosted Thanksgiving think that would be great. That would be so much easier than what I did to host. But that's not the point. The point is that you would be aware that something is missing. You would probably feel tricked. You would say, you invite me over to celebrate and to give thanks, but honestly, I find that that's a little bit hard when all I'm having is water. See, we have this natural understanding that celebration involves food, that we want to engage our bodies, and that there's a special time happening. We eat and we talk, and that everything is a part of that. We inherently understand that we engage our whole bodies in the act of celebration. So why should worship be any different? Many of us have experienced a tendency in our Christian lives to make worshiping God primarily an intellectual activity. We think about God. We say things about God. And you know, if we're really crazy, maybe we allow ourselves to feel something. Just a little bit. I mean, a few emotions are okay, but let's not get crazy. Few of us think about how worship connects to our body, though. Maybe it ought to. We're in the middle of a sermon series on the Sermon on the Mount, as we've said. This passage is a message that Jesus gave to a group of Jewish peasants who were gathered on the hills above the Sea of Galilee. And what he's been talking about through this whole sermon is the life of blessing. That's why we call this Blessed Are. It's what Jesus calls the kingdom of the heavens. He's trying to paint a picture for people of what it looks like to live in the kingdom of the heavens. And he's talked about various things. And now he gets to this idea of fasting. Now, we didn't really plan to talk about fasting on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. That's just kind of one of God's little jokes that he plays on us. Sometimes the sermon lines up perfectly with what's going on, and sometimes there's a little bit of irony involved. So you can thank God for that one. But today we're going to see that it's actually really appropriate to think about fasting today for a number of reasons. Sometimes we worship through feasting. That's what many of us did this past week. But sometimes we worship through fasting. And we could learn a little bit about what that looks like. We can learn about how to engage our whole bodies in the act of worship. So we're going to be talking about what it looks like to worship God with your body. I think we need some help in this area. Our culture that we live among tends to be a cerebral culture. The fact that most of you know what that word means proves the point. We live in our heads. We think a lot. This church in particular, our demographic here, we tend to be heady kinds of people for the most part. But the Bible is clear that worship involves heart, mind, soul, and body. And when we learn to integrate our bodies into the act of worship, we become more integrated people. We can relate to God in deeper ways. I think it's also not a coincidence that we're talking about this on the first day of Advent. Part of the mystery of the Christmas season is the unthinkable plot twist of history that God, the creator of the universe, would come to earth in a physical body. His choice to do that gives our bodies dignity, the fact that God would be a human. And so as we begin the Advent series to think about what it looks like to worship God fully with our physical selves connects deeply with this season of waiting and anticipating the incarnation. Now, there's actually many ways that we could worship God with our body. This morning, we'll be mostly talking about fasting because that's what Jesus focuses on in this passage. But as we think about it, I want to give you permission to think about it broader, to include other categories of physical expressions of worship. And in particular, I want to add a caveat that for some people here, fasting should not be included in their menu of worship practices. If you're young, if you're elderly, if you're ill, if you're pregnant, fasting is probably not a good thing to engage with. For others of you, perhaps you've had a history with disordered eating. Our culture can tend to skew food in particular for lots of us. And so if that's true, or if there's mental health issues, depression and anxiety, where food can be an integral part of maintaining some sense of rhythm, then fasting might not be helpful. So if that's the case, listen to these words and think, what else could I do? How are there other ways that I could worship with my body? But for some of us, this might be a practice that we're less familiar with, but we could begin to incorporate into our worshiping lives. We're going to start this morning by looking at what Jesus said regarding how not to fast. He gives some very clear instructions on bad reasons to fast. And then we're going to look at what he says about how and why we should fast. And we'll think about that in our own lives and how that might connect with what we have going on. And then we'll get real practical, and I'll offer a few very concrete suggestions and talk a little bit more specifically about what fasting really looks like. Well, for the past few weeks, we've seen Jesus addressing issues of worship. This is the third in a series of passages where Jesus begins with an element of worship and gives us specific instructions. He started with when you give, and he gave us instructions on how to integrate our financial lives into our worshiping lives. He wanted us to realize that our time, our energy, our money, that we sacrifice stuff for God, and that's part of worship. Worship involves our wallet. Then he moved on to say, when you pray, and he gave us instructions on how we ought to pray to God. He gave us a model prayer that guides us in what it looks like to address our Father in heaven. He wants us to understand that worshiping God, being a Christian, is not just about observing or sitting back and seeing something happen, but it involves our participation. Worship involves our participation. And now he moves on to the third phrase where he says, when you fast. And he gives us instructions about fasting. Notice that all three of these elements, Jesus seems to assume that they're going to happen. Jesus seems to assume that giving, praying, and fasting are part of what it looks like to worship. He just wants to give us some clarity on how we ought to do those things. So this is how he starts. He tells us how not to fast. It's Matthew 6, verse 16. And when you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. This fits well with what Jesus has said about giving and about praying. He started this passage by saying, beware of practicing your righteousness before others. And the whole focus of this section on worship has been geared towards our tendency to be very aware of the people around us. And in our spiritual lives, to tend towards orienting ourselves towards people, so that our spirituality becomes a kind of show, a kind of display to impress the people we're around. But Jesus is constantly bringing us back to say, worship is not about impressing the people around you. It's about reorienting yourself towards God. Your worship should be God-directed. So his comments about fasting are very much in line with that. You're fasting not by showing it off to people, by making it very clear and flaunting it, but you're orienting yourself toward God. It might help to understand that for the average religious Jew, fasting was very much a part of their lives. Religious Jews in the first century would fast 2 days a week, Mondays and Thursdays. They would fast from sundown to sundown. So late Sunday night, they would eat dinner before sun went down. When the sun went down, they would fast, skipping breakfast and lunch on Monday. And then after the sun went down on Monday night, they would have their dinner meal. You might remember Luke 18, one of the Pharisees prays, I fast twice a week, I give tithes to the poor. That's what he's talking about, the traditional practice of fasting on Mondays and Thursdays. So Jesus' warning makes sense. We have this innate understanding that people seem to sometimes show off their spiritual lives, and it connects with a lot about what he's been saying. For most of us, this command here, Jesus says, when you fast, don't do this, we can put it in the column of things that we're pretty good at, you know? And that's nice. I mean, Jesus gives a lot of really hard things to follow, but here's one that most of you have down pat. So congratulations. For most of you, I haven't seen you disfigure your faces. I mean, some of us may look disfigured more normally, but that's different. You don't show off fasting. You don't come here in sackcloth and ashes and proclaim yourself to be fasting. That this is something we kind of have down. But for a lot of us, fasting is foreign. It might not be part of what we do normally. So maybe a better question for us to ask is, why don't we fast? Why don't we fast at all? As I studied this passage, it just kept striking me that Jesus says, when you fast. That he's assuming this as a part of our worship. And that hasn't been something I've been taught a lot about or experienced much of. Why not? I think it has to do with this disconnect that we've made between a lot of our lives and our physical selves. That we've separated ourselves from our bodies. When I first started studying this passage a few months ago, I looked at it and I thought, uh-oh, I'm going to preach on fasting. I better learn to do this. If I'm going to say anything, I better have some experience with this. And so I started experimenting with it a little bit, and I'll share more about that later. But it came a little bit different to me. We tend to live in our heads, and we tend to kind of be thinking that life happens up here. So our bodies can seem like inconveniences or distractions sometimes. But the reality is fasting is very biblical. 60 to 70 times it's mentioned in the Bible. 20 of those are in the New Testament. For thousands of years, fasting has been part of the history of the church. The early church fasted. The medieval church fasted. The reformers fasted. But one author I read said he couldn't find a single book written about fasting between 1861 and 1954. It's almost 100 years where the church seemed to have forgotten about fasting. Why? There's a heresy in the ancient world called Gnosticism. That's Gnosticism with a G. And the basic idea of this heresy was that our minds are all that mattered, that the physicality of the world was something to be escaped, that it was dirty and unclean. For them, enlightenment was finally reaching understanding, this intellectual state of being. And many cultural critics would say that our culture today is what you would call neo-Gnostic, that we have this mentality again, not just in the church, but in the culture at large. Today, technologists like Ray Kurzweil predict that by 2045, we'll be able to upload our minds to the cloud. But why would we even want to do that? Why would that be appealing to anybody unless we have this sense that escaping our bodies would be so wonderful, that we wouldn't have those aches and pains, that we wouldn't have the inconvenience of eating, that we could just live perfect intellectual lives? I think the problem we have is that we can't fully control our bodies. We want to be able to control things, and our bodies don't look exactly the way we want them to look. There's times where I want my body to do things, and I find that it can't. There's times where some noises come out of my body that I wish wouldn't. There's things I want to happen that don't. But as much as our bodies are difficult and frustrating, aren't they incredible at the same time? You know that feeling when you wake up and you just stretch. You feel your muscles waking up for the first time. Isn't that incredible? Or a hard workout when you work hard and then you get to stop and rest. Just feel that. I went for a run yesterday and my body felt sore all day, and then I stopped for some number of hours, and this morning I felt better. My body just did that. Recovers on its own. And don't get me started about food. Eating, I mean, turkey and stuffing and chocolate pecan pie is my weakness. I mean, boy, I've had more chocolate pecan pie. Any recipe that starts by dissolving sugar into corn syrup is just going to win, right? You add the butter. I mean, it's a great recipe. Eating, do we really want to escape this? Do we really want to escape our bodies? God has given us this incredible gift of being physical. But maybe we've lost some sense that our physical bodies are connected to our spiritual lives. And we think of spirituality as up there. But what if we could reconnect those things? What if we could reintegrate ourselves? What would that look like? Let's see what Jesus says. After he says, when you fast, don't do this, he says, this is how you ought to fast. Here's Matthew 6, verses 17 to 18. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Again, Jesus assumes that you're going to fast. He just wants to give you some instruction on how to do it. And again, his point here is that fasting is between you and God. It's something that you can do with your body to reorient you towards God, who sees in secret. Like giving and like praying, it's an act of worship, not to impress the people around you, but to connect you in a deeper way to who God is. But how does fasting do that? How does not eating have anything to do with worship? Or another way to say that is, why should we fast at all? Why fast? I've been helped by several authors in researching this to understand this question. Among them are Dallas Willard, Scott McKnight, Richard Foster. They don't all agree with each other, which is great because you get some different perspectives. And one particular book I've found helpful is a small book called Fasting by Scott McKnight. I'm going to share some of his suggestions mixed in with a few of my own. He points out that a lot of people fast with a goal in mind, that you want something to happen because you have fasted. But he says when you look at the scriptures, most of the reasons that people fasted in the Bible are as a response to something that's happened, that there's a state of being, usually sorrow or grief or confusion or sin or the weightiness of a major decision. There's some state, some heaviness, and as a response to that, people fast. He calls it a physical response to a grievous, sacred moment in life. I love that phrasing, a response to a grievous, sacred moment in life. Think about fasting like laughing. Most of you don't say, gee, I think I'll feel better if I laugh. I'm going to have myself a little chuckle. Right? It's generally not the way we laugh. Generally, something happens, something funny, something surprising, and we just laugh. It's our body's physical way of involving itself with what's just happened, of engaging with some situation. Fasting is like that. What do you do when something terrible happens? What do you do when you lose somebody close to you? What do you do in response to the pain and suffering in the world around you? What action can you take? How can I do something meaningful to express my sorrow or confusion? Well, you can fast. I met recently with our new church representative from International Justice Mission. This is one of our missions partners, and they work with injustice and poverty throughout the world, fighting it with lawyers and various methods, working with law enforcement. And the person was telling me that his most common question that he gets from people when he goes to churches is people saying, "What more can I do?" They give money, which is great, and they pray, but they want to do something more. And I think that connects to this desire we have to take action. We want something to do in the response of a great, terrible situation. Well, maybe we could fast. And you might say, well, what good would that do? That's not going to help anybody. That's not going to change anything. But maybe that's the point. Maybe by fasting, we engage with our helplessness. We give expression to our sorrow and our grief. We join with others in their suffering. There are times in our lives, seasons in our nation, spaces where we ought to just grieve, repent, mourn. And fasting is a way to do that physically. Doesn't mean you have to be sad in order to fast. In fact, we can schedule a time. You can pick a day and say, I'm going to fast that day as a way of expressing my grief. You might say, well, that sounds weird. It's weird to pick a day to grieve, but why is that any weirder than picking a day to celebrate? We say, Thursday at 1 p.m., arrive at my house, and there'll be copious amounts of food, and we will celebrate. And we plan, and we prepare, and we work, and we stress to make that celebration special. Well, maybe the same thing goes for grief. To pick a time and a place and say, this is the time that I'm going to set aside to engage with the grief that I feel. Jesus' instruction is to go about normal life when you fast. You don't have to make a big deal about it. You don't have to put it on the calendar, or you don't have to proclaim it to people. You don't have to work up some deep emotions. You get dressed. You take a shower. The things he mentions are simply the normal activities. You go out. You go about your day. But your body grieves for you. Because as you get hungry throughout the day, your body says, hey, if this keeps going on, I'm not going to last much longer. You experience dependence. You experience weakness. And your body mourns in a very physical sense. Jesus ends his words by saying, your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And so you're going about your day, you're fasting, and it's like you and God have this little secret. You have this connection, this physical, spiritual connection to God throughout your day that God won't let you forget, because your stomach won't let you forget, because you feel it moment by moment. And God is ever present with you in that, secretly connected to you through your body. It's a powerful thing to do, to express a grievous, sacred moment in your life. Now, there are a lot of things going on right now that you could fast as a response to. For some, the holidays are a time of grief. Some of you have lost people, close people in your lives. It's a time of political drama in our nation that has far-reaching implications, and perhaps fasting is a way to express however you're feeling about that. There's international things going on, pain in the world, suffering, injustice. Maybe fasting is your way to cry out to God for those things. We're also in the middle of a pretty unique season as a church. Here at PBC, we have a lot of transition going on, perhaps one of the greatest seasons of transition we've been in a while. We have several staff positions open right now. We've recently filled several. We're anticipating a few more. We're looking at a major remodel of our worshiping space. That involves a lot of change. Change is hard. Change involves losing something. Change always involves a little bit of grief. Now, we're optimistic that God is doing something during this season, that he's preparing us to minister well here in this place for the generations to come. But that doesn't mean the change is easy. In fact, even the remodel that we're thinking about, that we're planning to do, that we've asked you to participate in, even that connects in a funny way with what we're talking about here. Because Jesus says there's this tendency to use our physical bodies to impress other people, to fast as a way of showing off. And we've never been like that. We've always been really careful to make sure our buildings are not the focus, that we're about people here, that we want to be about connecting with God. And so there's a temptation, there's a worry that if we're going to spend some time and money in our buildings, are we now going to try to impress people? Are we now changing to try to be flashy? But that's not at all what's going on. In fact, we're doing what Jesus says. We're saying, let's be aware that our physical space matters. That as we worship in bodies. And what we see, even when you came in today, you saw these beautiful banners. It matters. It draws us towards God in a new way, because we are whole people. So if we can spend a little money to improve the physical space, and if that reaps spiritual benefits, boy, that's an incredible investment to make. And if that helps other people come to know God, that's a powerful thing to do. So what does it look like? What for you could be something that moves you to respond in a physical way? How can you worship with your body in response to something happening? Well, we've talked about how not to fast. We've talked a little bit about reasons to fast. And now I want to get really specific and talk about some of the ways that fasting could take place. Before that, I want to broaden out to worship a little bit and think about worship. There's a Hebrew word that's used primarily for worship. It's the word chabad. And so in various places in the Old Testament, you'll read that the people went over there to worship. And what that means is that the people went over there to do this. This is the Hebrew word for chabad. This is worship in the Old Testament. It's a physical activity. And it's pretty awkward, especially when you're on a stage and everybody's looking at you. But it's also very vulnerable. You could come up and hurt me pretty easily. The person in front of me could do things to me that would hurt. And I feel weak, independent, totally submissive. So there's this physical action that you take that expresses something deep within. There's seven words in Hebrew that are used for praise. Most of those words also have physical meanings. One means to kneel. One means to open up your hand. One means to shout forth with your mouth. Worship is not something that just happens in our heads. Worship involves all of us. So how can we grow in that? Could fasting be a way for us to reconnect our bodies to our spiritual lives? I think it could be. But what does it look like? How do you start? What did I just stop eating till now? I mean, when do I start eating again? What's okay? How does it look? Well, let's get specific. There's three different ways to fast. The first is called a normal fast. And this is where you don't eat any food, but you do drink water. This is what Jesus did for 40 days. This is the majority of what you see when people talk about fasting in the Bible. There's no food, no caloric intake, but there is water. Incidentally, 40 days is about the physical limit of how long your body can last before important things start to shut down. So 40 days is kind of the limit of fasting for a normal fast. An absolute fast is the second kind of fast. This is where you don't eat any food or drink any water. This is much more rare, but this is what Esther does when she's trying to figure out how to talk to the king. She also invites others to fast with her. And this is a common form of fasting when you're facing a big decision or facing a big moment. You invite God into that time of discernment and asking, seeking God. Incidentally, 3 days is about the physical limit of how long you can go without water before your body starts to shut down. Finally, there's a partial fast. This is where you abstain from certain foods. This is also pretty rare in the Bible, but you see it happening, for instance, when Daniel doesn't eat meat. He eats only vegetables. There's other cases. Elijah only ate locusts and honey. Many of you maybe have done this for Lent. Maybe you give up chocolate or something for a period. There's not much data on when your body starts to shut down without chocolate. I've only gone a couple days, so I don't know. But I'm pretty sure there's a point where things really stop working. Generally, when the Bible talks about fasting, it's a 24-hour fast, which would be sundown to sundown, like I said. But there's also a 12-hour fast, which would be where you eat breakfast early in the morning, essentially skip lunch, wait about 12 hours, and then eat dinner at the end of the day. This is what I've been practicing for the last several months, doing kind of occasional 12-hour fasts to see what it feels like. And here's my suggestion for you, that you try one of these. Maybe a 12-hour fast, maybe a 24-hour fast, that you just skip a couple meals. Try fasting for the right reasons. Try fasting not because, oh, Thanksgiving was big and I had a lot of food and this works perfectly because now I can slim down again, but try fasting as a way to start to engage your body in worship. Incidentally, the early church kept fasting. Remember, they would have been Jews and they started following Jesus, but they knew something had changed. So instead of fasting Mondays and Thursdays, the early church fasted Wednesdays and Fridays. So, you know, they wanted to shake things up to make it different, but they kept that practice. So when Jesus said to them, when you fast, they knew what he was talking about. This was something that they were involved in. Today is also the first week of Advent, so perhaps Advent is a series that you could take meaningfully to fast in. It's 4 weeks. Maybe you could fast one day a week for Advent as a way of anticipating this season, as a way of waiting and waiting, addressing your sorrow as you wait. Here's what I can say. If you try this 24-hour fast, 12-hour fast, probably you'll get to the end of it and say, okay, that was interesting. It won't be earth-shattering. You probably won't say, wow, Paul was right. My soul and body feel integrated in a way that I've never experienced before. This is amazing. You probably won't have that experience because fasting is not so much something about the particular moment as it is about the consistency, the practice, the pattern. But over time, I think, if you engage with this, you'll start to notice something. You'll start to even look forward to times where you experience dependence and weakness in a physical sense because it reminds you of God. You'll look back on those times as special times that you shared with Christ. Maybe you'll invite others to fast with you for unique things. Maybe your small group would fast together. Jesus' instructions to do it in secret does not mean you can never talk about it. Does not mean it has to be absolutely private. There's all sorts of biblical examples of groups fasting together. You can talk about it. You can share it with other people. You can share your experiences. You can learn from others. The point is to be focused on God as you do it. Finally, all of this can be applied in a number of ways. Again, at the beginning, I said maybe fasting isn't the healthiest thing for you to do. If that's the case, then find some other ways to worship God with your body. Kneel when you pray. Raise your hands. Lie on your face. Dance, clap, something. Figure out a way to engage your body with your spiritual life. And with all of this, it might take some time to learn. You'll try something, it won't really click. You'll try something else. Give yourself freedom to have a little bit of trial and error. But think about ways to incorporate this into the rhythm of your worship. I would never invite you over to my house for Thanksgiving and not serve you food. So don't worry. If I do invite you over and think, oh boy, here it comes. I'm only getting water. I wouldn't do that. In fact, I'd probably never invite you over to my home for any purpose without serving you food. I like to eat. I like to cook. And people having people over is a celebration. We like to feast when we celebrate. Most of us know how to feast well. We have the feasting part down pretty well. When we're happy, we like to eat because it makes us happier. Our problem is when we're sad, we like to eat because it's like makes us stop feeling sad. But actually, when we're sad and when we fast, we feel worse. We feel more sad because now we're sad and hungry. But that's kind of the point. We're engaging our sadness. We're experiencing it. We're inviting it into our relationship with God. And when that happens, often something surprising comes of it, something powerful that we don't expect, but that connects us to God in a special way. So try fasting, or try some other way to worship God with your body. Schedule it, or do it spontaneously. Whatever fits. Play with this, see what you find out. I want to invite the band to come up. And we're going to move now into another time of worshiping God by singing, which is physical. We use our bodies to sing. So we're actually well-versed in worshiping God with our body. But maybe we could play a little bit this morning with being a little more expressive. I want to give you permission today to worship God in a new way with your body. We're going to start with a song that talks about our brokenness, talks about our pain. It's a perfect time to engage with your body. Caleb's going to give us some instruction for the second song on a specific way we might engage God. Think about this. What does it look like for you? Maybe it's as simple as bowing your head and closing your eyes. Maybe it's holding your hand in an open gesture. That's a Hebrew kind of praise. Do something. invite God into all of you. Let me pray for us. Father, we are completely dependent on you. All that we have, all that we are, the very breath in our lungs comes from you. Our lives would stop suddenly if you withdrew your hand of sustenance. God, help us to remember that. Help us to live in that awareness of dependence. It's so easy to forget, to become confident in our own abilities, to keep on going, keep on doing, keep on working, because things just keep happening and we grow unaware of our need for you. Help us to engage our bodies in a way that connects us to how important you are in our lives. Pray that you would give us courage and the intentionality to build this into our lives, but ultimately that it might connect us with you and your work in a deeper sense. Thanks, God, for giving us this gift, for the gift of our bodies, and for the ability to use them in worship. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.